You are listening to CFRC Radio from Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, 101.9 FM and CFRC.ca.
Welcome to Songwriters from Here and Away. This is a show that focuses on new and established songwriters from Atlanta, Canada, across Canada, and around the world. Hello, and thanks for tuning in. My name is Robert Campbell. This week we have an interview that I did with Mr. Aaron English. Aaron has many albums released, and he is a writer out of the Nashville area now, originally from the west coast of the USA. He has lots of stories to tell and has been very instrumental in a number of areas besides songwriting. So we're going to dive into his chat. He sings a song for us, as well as we're going to play some of his tracks. Here we go. Aaron English, thank you for jumping into Songwriters from Here and Away. Thanks for taking the time. Where are you right now?
I see you
in your studio, of course.
Yeah, in my studio in our new apartment right on the lake in Nashville, Tennessee. Beth has just wandered off to set up a hammock in the trees.
Nice.
Moved from one apartment to the other, 50 meters, excuse me.
You can use yards. Most Canadians are kind of still in that zone. So,
all right. Well, we moved right down the hill, and it makes a big difference. We look out on the woods, and just beyond that is the lake, the reservoir for the city of Nashville. It's flood control and drinking water, and hawks and groundhogs and raccoons, and so surrounded by wildlife, but still in the city of Nashville, 15 minutes from downtown, 5 minutes from the airport.
Nice.
That's where
beautiful.
Yeah.
How long have you been there in Nashville?
6 years.
Yeah. Yeah. Where were you before that? Where did you kind of grow up?
I'm a Seattle native, and being born and raised in Seattle, it's easy just to say.
Yeah.
Any touring musician has these wandering periods, like in the entire book of Exodus. Like, where are you? You just kind of you're en route.
Yeah.
And so, my touring life for about 10 years before I moved to Nashville was I'm en route.
I've been following you on social media, I guess, and liking your songs and listening to to the variety of material that you do. You're a piano player, obviously, you know, for those who are watching the video, it's obvious that you've got four or five keyboards around you. You've been playing since a kid, since you're a kid, I guess.
Yeah, I never did really get into guitar, but I admire guitar. The grass is always greener.
Right.
Piano was just what I happened to play, and that's because us boys were taking lessons as kids. Some of us, I guess, were just more inclined to do what our parents told us, and it never occurred to us to stop. So here I am playing piano for a living because Mom said at some point, why don't you take lessons? Okay.
You're doing a lot of original music, and I've heard a couple of covers. You're touring. You've been recording. How many albums have you done now?
It gets hard to count, especially in this day and age. There's
singles and all that. Yeah.
Yeah. And compilations and live albums. And so it really gets harder and harder to say what constitutes an album. I think if you go to discogs.com, wonderful nonprofit site, maybe discogs.org, there's somebody who keeps track better than I do.
Right.
So ask them.
Okay. I will. We'll find out. I'll do an insert right here. I'll say, here's how many singles he's done. And yeah. Okay.
Uh-huh.
I went up onto Discogs, DISCOGS.com, which is an online database that collects artists' albums and releases and productions, all sorts of data. And Aaron has many albums and a number of singles, as well as lots of production credits and playing credits for other artists. So go check that out. You can search out all your favorite artists on discogs.com. It is a free open source website. The track I'm going to play now is Aaron's All the Waters of This World.
So we cry 'cause we're made of water. it salt as our debt to the sweat of our fathers. And our mothers bled us into this light screaming, where blood tastes of metal and tears make us rust. How could you love me? I ain't done nothing. My wounds are my prison. I'm suckling fear. Your heart has gone dry, and I can't get through. Your fear. You want trust, but you'll settle for safety. I just want you near. Let it fly, all your pride, your secrets, into the light, a startled dove. Let it rain on the desert of all your fevers and grieving. My love, how could you love me? I ain't done nothing. My wounds are my prison. I'm suckling fear. Oh, woman, what can I do? Your heart has gone dry, and I can't get through. This world and our own you
Since I started touring heavily, the incentive to keep releasing stuff increased, because people always want something new. Whenever you come back around to their city, they want to buy something else.
Right.
And then also in the Spotify's of the world, it incentivizes you to release often. So mm-hmm. If you can pump out a single a month to keep the Spotify's happy, if you can pump out a live album a year to keep the touring merch well stuffed, it's just smart in this day.
Right.
And that's
everybody kind of what you're doing, eh?
Yeah,
or trying to. Yeah.
5 years to make a perfect record is not necessarily world that we live in anymore. So
no.
I'm trying to adjust to that. That said, I'm finishing up a record, and the last official studio album was 2018. So that's 7 years of, have I been tweaking and perfecting? Sure. But along the way, releasing singles and then songs that are all over YouTube and they're fully produced, but they were never officially released. And it's a vast gray area. My favorite example is the TikTok artists, the Instagram artists who don't release onto the streaming platforms at all. They just release onto the socials. So what does it even mean to release a song anymore? Not to pick apart your question until it's meaningless, but it kind of is. And those of us who still love albums, you know, you guys, I met you guys in a singer-songwriter context, touring singer-songwriters, and it was, God, there's something still celebrated about an album because it's a statement.
Right.
It's a diary. It's a snapshot. And you buy it and you listen to the whole thing, and it's a deep dive. And so I think of studio album as the real release.
Right. Yeah. You've got this one in the can that's close to being ready to go, is it?
Yeah, trying to release it before the end of June. And
nice.
It's difficult to convince yourself that is the most important thing to be doing at any given moment. And at this point in time, the value of a studio album, the value of a recording is, it's hard to nail down.
Right. It's a niche market. People who actually sit down and listen to an album is like a niche kind of a thing nowadays, right?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, because the arc of the story that you can create through 8 or 10 or 12 tunes can be huge, right? It can be really gratifying if it's done well, right?
Yeah.
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 As opposed to the 20-second clip that's good to dance to on TikTok, or all the live songs that I play on tour but never record, and
right.
People fall in love with those. And there's this vast era. And it's not unique to our times, any folk musician, anybody who's prolific, the Bob Dylans, the Woody Guthries, they would write the song a day and archive it somewhere. And I love that idea of a vast catalog, and some of them see the light of day. But as something of a traditionalist in the singer-songwriter genre, the idea of an album as a statement legitimizes and codifies the journey. Oh,
right.
Songwriter.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Will you be able to share one of the songs off the new album yet?
In order to satisfy the Spotify beasts, I've been feeding those beasts a new song and album from the album every month.
Okay.
And that's purely for the algorithms, but it also is to keep reminding people he exists, he's making music, here's another one, build excitement for the album. And it is a practical concession to the streaming platforms, but also our attention spans are so short nowadays that if you're releasing an album every 7 years, you might as well find a way to stretch that out.
Yeah. Well, let's play one of those songs then. Which one will it be?
Oh, let's play Even This Is Music.
Okay. Even This Is Music. Thank you.
and the melodies of the night between their branches. Sing it in the rhythm of the wailing of the stars overhead, to the beat of blood, a time in flight, and empires rise and fall.
How did you write Even This Is Music? Where do you come from when you write? And do you remember writing that tune? And how did it come to being for you?
Now, this whole album is a response to my dad dying. It's been a couple of years ago now. But more recently, my uncle died. My brother just died. And the nurses at the home where my mom is, she has Alzheimer's, and they're telling me it's the last stage of Alzheimer's for her. So there's this this current of death and mortality and facing it and grieving and reflecting on my own mortality and trying to keep that from being just heavy and just sad.
Yeah.
Because it is universal and it is part of life. And the other side of the coin. Shortly after Dad died, all of these song ideas that had been sitting for, in some cases, decades, started to come to mind. And none of them were lyric-driven. They were all musical. They were all moods. So there was something about the texture, the emotion, the indefinable a flavor of the music that started to speak to me. I thought of this track and this track and this track. Oh, my God, this track. Oh, this is great. How about this one? And they all started to fit together into a narrative that didn't have words, which I think is a wonderful way to approach songwriting. And this one in particular, this song, the music was written by one of my oldest friends and collaborators, a friend since college, and the bassist in my band. And we rarely see each other in person. He's always flitting about the world, and so am I. But he would just send song ideas to me, and he's been doing that since college, and I would just put them in a folder somewhere. And there were a couple of those that I was drawn to in the context of this mood of grief and facing mortality. And and two of them ended up on this record, and I couldn't get enough of just listening to them over the years, and it probably has been decades in the case of these two ideas. So the fleshing out of those ideas with lyric and melody and structure from what was originally just a long jam that he sent me. Very cool, because the process of working on something that's been sitting in a folder that already had structure, instrumentation to it, some production, it's very different than sitting at a piano and writing from scratch.
Sure. Yeah.
It's painting in a very different way. I enjoy that you are asked to inhabit a world that to some extent already exists. And then the lyrics are called out of that. The melody is called out of that.
Yeah, especially when it's kind of, it's someone else's world that you're kind of stepping into, right? Mm-hmm. In this case, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Your collaborator created something and sent it along to you, and here we go, dive in. Yeah.
Yeah. I've learned since moving in Nashville that the habit of building worlds with a team is very common. Even here, I've been working with some of the same musicians forever and ever. And the continuity of process and of aesthetic, the intuition that you build together, it's incredible and it's precious. And at some point, you, if you're fortunate enough, you're working with people long enough that you build that rapport. Mm-hmm. And it's so much more efficient and so much more effortless in so many ways than building new relationships. Right. So it's common for folks to move here in Nashville and want to.
Sure.
Like I want to get into Luke Bryan's team, or like I got these great songs, I've got that ear for what he's looking for. Like I want to be his guitarist. It's never going to happen because they built their team 20 years ago when they were 14 years old. Yeah. And part of the strength of that brand, the power of the continuity is that they've been married to each other for all those years and it just works.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It, removing a cog from that machine, it's just, you can't.
Right. Yeah. It gets pretty challenging. It may happen from time to time for sure, but yeah. Yeah. You're listening to an interview with Aaron English out of Nashville, Tennessee. Please check out our website, www.sfhaa.ca. Songwriters from here and away. And you can find more information on Aaron and all the artists that we have. Our podcast will have more tracks and more interview from this artist, as well as all the previous shows that are well worth looking at. So please check them out and support those artists. Find their music, download it, make a donation. You can find Aaron English at aaronenglish.com, AaronEnglish.com, just like it sounds. Here we go, back to the interview and some live songs and more tracks.
So you've been writing, you said decades, you've been writing since teen years?
Sure. Yeah. I turned, 12 or 13, and then fell in love with pop music, and in part because I realized that my peers thought it was cool. And
right.
The power of middle school, early adolescence, not only wanting to fit in, but also all of a sudden you realize that the girls exist and they like stuff. And what they really seem to like in particular is the pop idols. And what the guys really seem to think is cool is the rock idols. Well, I've been creative. I've been an artist. I've been creating things since I was a little kid. And then I realized, okay, so all of the other creative things I do aren't cool, really. So how about this one?
Yeah. Well, right,
as a storyteller, and I don't really care what the medium is, but when you consider where I was at 12 years old, I mean, my idols were guys like Jim Henson.
Right.
And it's just, the puppeteering doesn't have the same street cred in
the cachet was a little different with the girls. Yeah. Uh-huh. Some of the stuff I've heard is you've blended Eastern music and different genres, different styles. Where are you at now that way?
A lot of it is the relationships that I build along the way. And then I get excited to work with these friends. So I wrote even this is music with my friend Miguel, and he said he'd been working on Indian scales. So mm-hmm. That song, you can hear them unfolding in surprising ways. Surprising because you don't listen to a lot of Indian classical music. And he's not Indian, he's Portuguese. But I love working with friends around the world. And just circumstantially, I've ended up working with a lot of East Africans because I run a music charity in East Africa, Pakistanis, because I was able to go to Pakistan and work with dear friends there to make a lot of music. So it's wherever seeds plant and grow, I end up working with those people. A lot of Italians and Swedes, and it's sometimes it's difficult to briefly tell the story of how I met this person, and it led to this, and it led to this, right. and it led to this. But
like you say, it's a journey.
Yeah, yeah. And Germans, Swedes, Italians, Pakistanis, and Brazilians, Kenyans. How? Well, how much time you got?
Yeah, exactly. So do you go out on tour to these places and then meet them and then end up writing with them, or do you go over to write and hang out?
It's a little bit of literally everything. Most of my touring over the past 8 years has been in Germany, and that just happens to be a really, really, really good place to tour. They're very receptive to the music, and there's a strong economy, so the money's reliable and the culture is reliable. So you know that if you book a gig and you show up on that date, then it will happen and you'll get paid what they said they'd pay, and people will show up to hear you. And the other stuff is more ephemeral. Like, how did I meet this one guy and then end up in Pakistan? It's just, right. Well... long story, but let me start somewhere. Yeah, it can be hard to unravel those threads. And I guess that speaks to what I was saying earlier about 20 years later, you've built these relationships. How did they start? I could get into that, but what has been built along the way has been this incredible flowering of a global community.
Here's a new track from Aaron called Sound the Alarm.
Before it's too late, before this world and everything in it has changed, before we're left high and dry, or drowning in the endless rain, that we will have only ourselves. We got to sound the alarm, we got to sound the alarm, we got to sound the alarm. We got to sound the alarm. We got to sound the alarm. पहले साफ थी धरती, आया जब से इंसान तब से काम थी धरती, निकलते हैं धुएं तो ये फैक्ट्री चलती, लगी पड़ी हर किसी को काम की जल्दी, काट के पेड़ों की ये छांव, जमीन को जला के रखा चांद पे पांव, हवा में ना गंदगी फैलाओ, मांगते हो पानी पहले पानी तो बचाओ, हाँ देखो सारे पेड़ पौधे कम हो गए हैं, they don't feel for the earth, ये सब नम हो गए हैं, देखो सारे पेड़ पौधे कम हो गए हैं, they don't feel for the earth, ये सब नम हो गए हैं, कितना बना खाया कितना रह गया, जब आया पानी सैलाबों में सब बह गया, no solution, मामला सख्त है भाई, चलो उठो जागने का, वक्त है भाई, हाँ We got to sound the alarm, we got to sound the alarm. 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 What if this tragedy is a wake-up call? A reminder we could lose it all. What if we trust in what is possible? ज़मीन मरे पी सब उठो इंसानियत जला हिक बे जला सब बराबर सब हिक सब प्यार सब हक We got to sound the alarm We got to sound the alarm
the African charity is wonderful.
Thank you.
That's good on you for doing that. Maybe tell folks a little bit about that, and then we can also link out to it on all the posts that we're going to do.
I appreciate that. International Youth Music Project, and not strictly African, but most of our efforts have been in East Africa at a handful of music schools for disadvantaged youth. And currently we're building a program in Nashville as well for disadvantaged kids here. We've worked in Burma, worked in North Carolina, so wherever there's an opportunity to help. But primarily the focus is 3 East African music schools. And I know and trust the people who run them, and I'm impressed with how well they run. And 2 of them I've been working with for 10 years. So it is a history. And the big part of the power of what we're doing, I think, is because I have these personal relationships and tour and collect instruments at gigs and then figure out how to get them 10,000 miles to these music schools. I can take a picture of it in Pittsburgh, and then they can send me a picture of it from Kampala, and it's the same guitar, and there's a smiling kid involved now. That's powerful. It's hard to scale that intimacy, but it's incredible.
It's very rewarding, isn't it, to see those kind of outcomes for something that you do. And I was just saying to a couple of people how the rewards of, for instance, hosting young songwriters and seeing them get up and do their first ever original song live in front of other people, like those kind of rewards are so intangible and rather ephemeral. How do you explain that, the joy of that? And I was watching the video of your African progeny, shall we say, playing music, and it's like, holy crow, that is so cool, right? It must be really rewarding. So good on you.
Thanks for putting it in the context of congratulations, by the way, and what an amazing feeling. I can't imagine. I love that. Knowing that you've touched someone's life and they turn into a songwriter, and those songs are your grandchildren, kind of.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah, it's a good thing, and all those children are your grandchildren in a way too. So, and when you go over there, I know you've been over a bit, and when you go over, they must be, I mean, it must be, I can't imagine, it must be wonderful. So anyways, I won't wax on about that. So, so right now, have you been writing a lot? Have you got stuff that you're working on currently? Would you want to share anything like that? Any newer stuff?
Sure, yeah.
Like not on the album, yeah.
Yeah, thought about putting this on the album, but didn't think it fit. Not that the album is too heavy, because again, nobody needs an album about grief that just sort of drapes grief over you while you listen to it. When I was a kid, one of my favorite records was Sting's. He wrote it after his mom and dad died. And he knew that it wouldn't sell well, and I remember an interview where he said, well, there's a market for the bereaved, but it's not a big one.
and not all songs are meant to be, recorded and played everywhere all the time, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, certain songs just work in certain situations.
I have realized that some of these songs, even though I think they're cool little catchy tunes, I wouldn't necessarily take them out on tour. It's not that they're heavy, but they are. I'm like, wow, I'm mortal. I'm like, I don't know that people showed up tonight to hear that. Not necessarily. I'll play this one. It was written years ago, and then I on a trip to Nashville, and then I didn't forget about it, but it ended up in the archives with the intention of revisiting it at some point. Written with Don Schaffer of Waterdeep. He's a producer, and then he and his wife have this duo, Waterdeep, that toured for years and years. Phenomenal producer. If you're a lover of singer-songwriters, you've probably heard some records that he's produced or co-written on. This is called Let's Get Lost Again. I think I'll turn the reverb down. There we go. That mix.
Yep, good.
Check, check, check. Okay. Okay.
Lovely. Thank you.
Thank you.
I was thinking about how you're playing and how that song is structured with the what they call the ostinato bass going on, where the bass sits in one spot and on one note, and the chords in your right hand are moving around, and it creates these dense clusters of notes and chords. And it's a great way to create emotion and movement. You know, it's really nice. Well done.
That's great. Thank you. The sense of traveling, for a traveling song.
Yeah. So that's a song that you could easily do at a show.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
There's more of a focus on that in Nashville than there often is when I'm sitting in my studio working with folks internationally. We'll create a song and then I have no idea how to play this live. Nashville, yeah, I know how to play this live. You sit down on a guitar and a keyboard and a song comes out now.
Yeah. So do you do a lot of co-writing with the Nashville country scene at all? Or?
Inevitably, yeah. And some of my songs sound vaguely country-ish, I suppose. But more it's Americana, whatever that means. It's whatever they wouldn't play on country radio. Its roots are showing for sure.
Yeah.
The American roots are in there somewhere.
You are listening to Aaron English on Songwriters From Here and Away. Please check us out online. We have YouTube and Instagram and Facebook and all that stuff, and we'd love to hear from you. Send us a note. Maybe we'll send you some music, too. We've got lots of stuff to send along. Please come and say hello. We're back to the show with Aaron English.
Are you going to be on tour soon? Are you traveling soon?
Yeah, I'm going to.
Coming to Canada?
Oh, I'd love to. Would they let me back in? This summer, back to Europe, playing a festival in Italy, and then doing some writing in Sweden. But mostly it's German gig after German gig, specifically Western Germany, for whatever reason.
Yeah. We had the best time in Germany for doing shows, for sure. We did. We also played Denmark and Holland and Netherlands, I should say, Belgium a little bit, and had great reception. But there's the density of that area, and the way they receive the North American music is fascinating.
Yeah. And the way they interpret it and mirror it back to us is also fascinating. There's a lot of a deep appreciation, deep love for folk traditions of the English-speaking countries.
And
many of my favorite English-speaking songwriters are not native English-speaking songwriters. And a big part of the draw, I think, for Germany, Netherlands, Belgium, is that there was a friendliness to the post-World War II regime. The Americans and the Brits came in and said, you know what, we'll help you rebuild. And the Germans in particular had so much of their culture taken away from them and tainted because it was co-opted into the the movement, the political movement. So post-World War II, you weren't really comfortable touching your folk traditions.
Right.
And then, so what do you have if you don't have your own culture to give you hope? Well, how about Elvis? How about the Beatles?
Yeah.
And ever since, it's been hell yes when it comes to American and British music.
Yeah, yeah.
It's such an honor and a pleasure to be playing for people with that sort of enthusiasm. Hopefully it's earned. If you show up and you're American and for crying out loud from Nashville, then you must be good. And to be singing into that kind of listening, what a privilege.
Yeah, I find the audience is very attentive, respectful. Some of the audiences, sometimes they're very kind of examining you and waiting, but as you warm up and they warm up to you, then by the end of the first set or the first half of the night, and then by the end of the night they're singing along and clapping, and it's fabulous. We learned a lot playing in another country, and one of the things actually that we learned, pronunciation and diction, so that they could see our lips. And because English was a second language, if you don't articulate your words well, they get lost, and they sometimes they would say, "What were you saying here?" And then that twigged us to saying, "Okay, maybe we need to be even sharper with our pronunciations and stuff." Right? Mm-hmm. And now, when coming back here, playing elsewhere, a lot of people come up to me and says, "Oh, I like that. I can hear your words. I understand what you're saying." Right?
I'm so glad you brought that up, because that's happened to me too.
Yeah. Has it?
And not speaking too quickly.
Mm-hmm.
That helps a lot. You want people to understand. And they can only understand up to a point, because you're coming from a different culture. So there's all the subtext that they're missing. And you know that you labored on those lyrics for days and years. And they have no idea what's underneath. That is a shame. So singing for more Americans and Canadians makes sense, because they get it.
Right.
But there isn't that immediate, like, oh, my God, you came from where? It's
right.
All another Nashville musician. Mm. You have to sell them on it. But it's a startling reminder every now and again when I discover how little they actually understood after a gig in Germany. But they liked it.
Right. If you have a melody that speaks to the emotion of what you're trying to convey, it comes through. So,
mm-hmm.
If they can feel it. Yeah.
Native English speakers are mostly listening to the melody anyway, instead of the lyrics.
I think we better hear another melody from Aaron English. And then I'd like to mention that the podcast will have more tracks and more interview. So please tune into the podcast. It's on all platforms that you can find out there, and on our website, sfhaa.ca. And he's got some great tunes coming up. So this one is called My Mirror. It's a brand new release.
In stereo, I get the feeling someone else is there. I can see you in the mirror, I can sense you in the air. Funny how the years go by, but time's not what it seems. 'Cause we don't feel those distances at all when we dream. And even though I try hard to hide you, part of you still lives on inside me. And every time I look into my eyes, I see your face. My mirror, my mirror, my mirror. My mirror, my mirror, my mirror, my. My mirror, my mirror, my mirror. My mirror, my mirror, my mirror, my. My mirror, my mirror, my mirror. My mirror, my mirror, my mirror, my. My mirror, my mirror, my mirror. My mirror, my mirror, my mirror, my. Something like a memory, something like a ghost.
watching you watch me with my eyes. Funny how the years go by, the son becomes his father. The needle of life finds a groove and sticks there. I open my mouth and your words come out, all of your truth and all your doubts. In every new light upon my face, I see your shadow. My mirror, my mirror, my mirror. My mirror, my mirror, my mirror, my. My mirror, my mirror, my mirror. My mirror, my mirror, my mirror, my. My mirror, my mirror, my mirror. My mirror, my mirror, my mirror, my. My mirror, my mirror, my mirror. My mirror, my mirror, my mirror, my. Go by, but time's not what it seems. Cause we don't feel those distances at all when we dream. And even though I try hard to hide you, part of you still lives on inside me. And every time I look into my eyes, I see your face.
When you write, where do you start with most of your songs? Are you the music person first? Do you have lyric books of lyrics? How does it marry up for you?
I think I tend to be more shy on the music side. I don't have to be, but it's important in Nashville for everyone to know their role, what their strengths are. And then when they step into a room for a co-write, they immediately get down to business because everyone falls into those roles. I can live in denial of my strengths and weaknesses because I'm not doing that regularly.
Right.
So I don't get conditioned to lean into certain strengths and away from others. I can just pretend that I can do it all because quite often I am doing it all. But when I am co-writing, I'll notice that I tend to lean back, come up with lyrics more. Mm. And who knows how that evolved other than I'm more comfortable singing than I am playing. I've noticed that a lot of writers are more comfortable making the music than they are the lyric. Of course, there are endless exceptions, but without being conscious of it immediately, I encourage them without saying a word to play something. And then I start scrambling through lyric notebook ideas, which mm-hmm. they're virtual. They're on my phone usually, mm-hmm. but I'm combing through them for ideas that fit whatever we roughly discussed before we started or that fit the mood of the music. And then I start compiling a subset. I just scrolling through the phone, pulling ideas, pasting them into another doc. And all of a sudden, this Word document, this iPhone note, whatever it is rich with loosely associated phrases. That mm. ideas that then can very quickly come together into you're probably looking for the hook first, or yeah. you have an idea of a narrative, like, you know, what about a song about this? So then you start with right. the first verse, setting the scene. Then, yeah, usually coming up with either the hook line for the chorus, getting right down to it, or yeah. starting with the table setting, the first couple of lines of the song. And oftentimes, even then, I'll find myself holding back on what would naturally come next, which is the melody. and let them sort of find it. And it's the weirdest thing, because often I'll do that when I'm working virtually with even This Is Music, for instance. That was a finished track. It was a very long jam that had been sitting there for years that had programmed drums and bass and guitar and keyboards on it. And I just drop right in and start writing the lyrics and melody. When I'm writing on my own, even I think it's even similar, where I'll just go through notebooks, piles of folders of ideas that already exist, and throw them together. So it really is about finding something that already exists, some inspiration that happened, some light bulb moment, and then flinging at it at another light bulb moment. So it's in your folder on your hard drive for years, some musical idea. And then you also have some Word doc full of thousands of lyric ideas, and opening them both and then throwing things together until they spark.
Right.
It's a weirdly passive process. It's craft. Whereas the inspiration, the creative part, the artist part happened years ago.
Right.
And,
or in the middle of the night, or wherever, whenever.
Unfortunately, it's usually the middle of the night. You're hanging like a...
Especially the good ones. KPP Concerts and CFRC 101.9 FM are turning up the heat this winter with a stacked lineup of shows. At the Broom Factory, don't miss out on Metal Fusion cellist extraordinaire Raphael Weinreth Brown on January 23rd. On February 14th, you can see local rockers Casador take the stage, while Canadian punk rockers The Flatliners are live on February 20th. And don't miss out on Daniel Romano's Outfit on March 13th, followed by Schoolhouse and Braden Lamb on March 15th. And the winter season rounds up with The Sheepdogs live at Kingston Grand Theatre on March 16th. For a complete list of shows and ticket information, visit kppconcerts.com.
We'll start with some general ways to turn ugly duckling emotions into swans. First.
Rock. Rock, rock, rock it.
Second.
Rock. Rock, rock, rock it.
Third. This is what one doctor suggests. Number three, number four, number five, number six, number seven. Now, look forward in a positive mode. Start by spending a few minutes
each Thursday at 10 p.m. listening to Bright Side of the Poo. What's it about? A way of life.
Number 10, give unto others. Reach out to those you can help or inspire. Now, it's time to flip this tape. On side two, you'll find a wonderful, calming relaxation exercise.